and welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Jake.
What? Okay, fine. I guess my name is Sebastian, and I'm a gay white man who's also French. Can you speak up my French accent?
Yeah, it's so strong. You were like, you were oozing with the Frenchness.
Wait for it.
It's the wrong kind of French.
Omelette du fromage.
Yes.
There you go. I spoke French.
Anyways, welcome to Can Queer. This week, we are going to be covering some of the biggest Canadian queer news stories. There are a few out there that happen, and we hopefully bring them to light in areas that maybe you may not have heard about them. There are also other stories that I'd like us to discuss. Okay. Offer our insight, our views, our opinions on, and wax poetic on various things as need may be.
Mm-hmm.
As there may be need. Either way, works. It's been a long day here, and I'm only on my second cup of tea.
Is it tea, though?
It is tea.
Are you sure it's tea?
It doesn't actually contain tea.
This is true.
It's an infusion.
We will be spilling the tea later on when we come and talk about drag queens, particularly the dominating U.S. drag culture that sort of emerged.
Because when you're talking about drag, tea means multiple different things.
Yes.
So, like, if you're talking about, like, drag kings, tea means testosterone. If they're, you know, a trans man, and if it's trans women, when you're talking about tea, that's just, like, trans women sometimes refer to themselves just as tea. Well, I mean,
but spilling the tea is colloquial, it comes out of, it was really popularized by RuPaul's Drag Race, and it means literally just spilling the beans or sharing gossip.
Oh, apparently I do not watch this show.
You really don't. We have to rope in Jake. Yeah. I mean,
because
Sebastian,
when you say spilling the tea, that to me means getting
hot tea on you. Like,
well, gentleman's milk from a drag queen.
That would also not where my mind went.
That definitely.
But I see where you're thinking. Well, we're going to kick it off yet again. I feel like there is not a week that goes by where I do not begin the show with a depressing update regarding the Toronto-based serial killer Bruce MacArthur.
Right.
Now, they're investigating 30 sites. He's been charged with 7 murders, 6 of whom we know. We're still waiting on the identity of the 7th person. We talked about that last week.
Right.
Moving swiftly on. I heard, actually, that they're waiting, because, of course, this is Canada.
Right.
They're waiting for the summer so that the ground can thaw, so they can actually excavate the 30-odd sites that they're keeping an eye on. Like, this is a very Canadian murder scene where we have to wait for it to be less frigidly cold for them to actually investigate, which is just,
I mean,
mind-boggling.
I can kind of see your point, but at the same time, if you think about it, the ground is going to be either frozen or covered in snow. It's hard to, if you have done garden work during the winter, it's hard.
The real point is that ground frost is not a common problem.
It's not.
Like in England, I don't think they would delay investigation due to ground frost. Maybe in the Hebrides. Maybe.
Well, they're on a mountain, perhaps.
But just also, like, these are 30-odd sites. It's like, if it's easy if you know the murder happens, you know, last year, last month, and you're looking and circling around an area, but now you have to look around 30-odd sites, which also have frostbite.
I would say a more Canadian problem is they don't want to investigate 30 sites because they don't want to inconvenience the neighbors. That would be very Canadian.
That would be Canadian.
Well, they are going to once it warms up.
Once it warms up.
When it warms up a tad.
And then ask the neighbors politely. Oh, terribly sorry there, eh? Do you mind if we dug up your backyard?
I hope that they ask permission, obviously. But I think in a lot of cases, people have come forward to reveal, because there was this call for people to reach out, you know, have you ever had this gentleman work on your property? So they have a large list of places, and including Bruce MacArthur's own properties from some of the places that they're waiting to excavate. Now, moving on, we've talked a lot about the fact that the Toronto Police Service for a long time did not take this case seriously. Men going missing was seen as a non-issue. Well, it wasn't seen as a non-issue, but there was a sense in the community that it wasn't being taken seriously. In fact, there's another faux pas, which I'll get to in just a moment.
We could say it was deprioritized off the table.
It was It was
like they acknowledged, like, yes, that is something worth looking into, and then they didn't.
And sometimes they did. But it's the scale and degree of enthusiasm with which it was investigated that really is up for critique here. Now, don't just believe me. Believe the current investigating officer for the Bruce MacArthur murders, who has filed paperwork internally with the Toronto Police Service's Internal Investigations Unit, pointing to potential improprieties or misconduct, has been what the phrase is being used.
Okay.
Essentially,
it's a very polite way of saying it.
The lead investigator has found... So Detective Sergeant Hank Itzinger, he's the one you see in the videos related to this. He has found evidence, apparently he found evidence of impropriety or misconduct at the start of investigation, but didn't have enough details to patch it all together. Well, he finally has. He finally has come to the root of what he thinks has been this misconduct or impropriety. And this relates to the actual investigation by the Toronto Police Service.
How are these defined in the context of an investigation? Like, what is misconduct and what is impropriety in the case of an investigation?
So we don't know. We don't know any of the details. But it could be maybe a witness wasn't followed up properly, things weren't investigated properly, steps were not taken or were taken badly at the wrong time. We simply don't know.
Okay.
I think it could be negligence, but...
It's just basically they were negligent at their jobs.
Well, we don't know.
Like, I'm not asking for the details. I'm saying, like, what would constitute this? Would it just be, like, hiding evidence or deleting things? Or are we talking about...
I think misconduct, I think it would constitute anything from ranging from negligence, which is unintentional, to hiding of evidence, which is also intentional, which is also damaging, so...
But if they're doing it deliberately, that'd be like obstruction, I would guess.
Yes, but then a suit would be like someone would be sued for it. So,
I guess really what I'm asking is
a severity.
I should go online and see how the Canadian legal system defines these terms, because, like I'm saying, like these will have a very specific meaning in this context.
Well, it's hella vague, and it relates specifically to what's under the Police Services Act.
Right.
So they kind of break it down. They break down some of the options there. This alleged impropriety that has been handed to the Internal Investigations Unit relates to a previous Toronto Police Service investigation, or an investigation that where they interviewed or interacted with Bruce MacArthur in some way.
Okay.
Now, we heard from other sources, other media have been reporting that apparently Bruce MacArthur was interviewed about 3 years prior to the prison investigation launching, which is the one that was the lead for. So the community members are thinking, well, you know, how come you interviewed him and he got away? What got wrong? Did you miss something that allowed this man to then do another 3-4 years of what is, you know, serial homicide?
Yeah.
You know, were key steps missed? We don't know. And we won't know until the Toronto Police Internal Investigations Unit has a chance to look into it. Now, so you actually asked me earlier before we went on air, you know, what about OIPRD, which is the Ontario Independent Police
Review
Directorate?
Yeah.
And they are the civilian body that actually investigates police misconduct.
Yeah.
Now, if a police officer injures or hurts somebody, at least in the province of Ontario, the SRU, there's a SIU, Serious Incident Unit, I think it is, investigates that.
Right.
But OIPRD is an independent province of Ontario body that investigates.
Because traditionally, when there's police misconduct accusations, cops would just investigate other cops and be like, I know Charlie, he's good folk, he wouldn't do that.
Yeah. There is a challenge, because of course, detectives move in and out of departments.
Mm-hmm.
You could be in homicide 1 week and then internal affairs the next. You know, of course, people would often step back and would recuse themselves if there's a conflict.
Yeah.
Which actually relates to a story that I'm hoping to move into in just a few moments. So one of the reasons I mentioned just now about how sometimes people would have to recuse themselves if they're in a position where obviously it would be a conflict of interest. And that comes up in another Canadian story that came up earlier this week. And this is the actual name, Kelly Canadian, who is 25... an openly gay man in Yellowknife, Northwest Territories.
Right.
So rural, remote Canada in the Northwest Territories. Well, anyway, was arrested for stealing a couple of pizzas and then assaulting a police officer. Now, we don't know the details of that case.
Right.
And really, that's irrelevant to this particular story. So Kelly is an openly gay man,
mm-hmm.
but after a few months into the incarceration, filed a human rights complaint against the North Slave Correctional Complex, which is the prison structure that was actually, that's run by the Northwest Territories government.
Yes. Slave named after Slave Lake, not named after slaves.
Indentured.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering about that. Yeah.
Me too, actually.
Yeah, slave is, I think it's originally pronounced slavey. I think it's an actual, like, indigenous like
slave
word.
Or slavey?
I think it's slavey or something like that. But anyway, it's a word from a language that just happens to look exactly like slave. Or maybe it actually is slaves. I'm going to look that up.
Okay, well,
you keep talking. I'm going to Google
so
it.
There was a number of things that happened. Now, the base here is you cannot discriminate against somebody based on their sexual orientation or gender identity, gender expression. And that includes creating a toxic environment. Now, you may be thinking, come on now, it's prison. Of course there's going to be a toxic environment.
Yeah.
You know, that's a bit of a no-brainer, you know. It's not a walk in the park. It's not child's play. But really the issue here is that gay men are at a higher rate of abuse inside prisons from the inmates. But that's not where the complaint is here. The complaint was actually against the staff at the NSCC, the North Slave Correctional Complex. And the staff were frequently calling Kelly the F word and various other things and extremely demeaning. They wouldn't put him with a cellmate because they didn't know what he'd get up to. But no, there's been tons of issues here, and they put him in solitary confinement and kept him there longer than was like reasonably allocated in the past.
Mm.
And there was just lots of things. And I think what Kelly's point here was is that you go in and you expect it from the inmates.
Yeah.
But the tone and the standard that was being set by the guards.
Yeah.
You know, the guards are essentially saying, yeah, you can, you know, effectively bully this guy because we're bullying him.
So we
don't care if you do, which really opens the floodgates to all kinds of abuse. Kelly won an out-of-court settlement with the Northwest Territories government, which include a non-disclosure clause, which Kelly's now broken to kind of bring this to light, this behavior from the guards there. Now, does this surprise you at all?
Not really.
Not really, yeah. I can't say that I'm surprised. I mean, prison, it's kind of a toxic environment already. Toxic masculinity obviously is a big factor. And when you have an environment like that, and the guards who obviously have the position of authority over the inmates, you kind of have this weird thing where if you see a straight man bullying a gay man out on the street, it will be 10 times worse in a prison because, you know, if it's not coming from the inmates who's already in a closed, agitating environment, then you get it from the guards who already have authority over you. So eventually that just happens.
I mean, I think that's probably a better way of interpreting it than toxic masculinity. I think it's just the nature of power.
I think toxic masculinity has a big part too.
Most people, if put into a position of power when they can get away with anyone and do anything they want against people who can't do anything back, like men and women, historically, mm-hmm. it's been shown, turn into bad
and
people.
Just to explain for
not universally, but well, it's really common.
That is common, but then inmate abuse is popular in any prison, not just Canadian. And the fact
that, not just men's prisons.
Yeah, so the fact, well, toxic masculinity, I think it's in this case.
Can you define it for this?
It would be the over exaggeration of masculinity, of male masculinity, that is stereotypically more violent, I suppose, or more aggressive.
So stereotypical macho traits.
Yeah. But it's in a way that is perpetuated very negatively. And, you know, if you think about a prison, like, if it's happening to inmates, then you wouldn't hear about it that much. And if they get sued for it, there's a non-disclosure clause, and especially in this situation where it's a gay inmate, like, it happens to anyone, but if it's a gay inmate, then you have to think, like, what's the implication of that? Is that gender specific? I would say it sort of is, just because it would happen. I can imagine something like this can happen in a woman's prison.
And it can also happen to straight men who are soft.
Yes.
It's not really about gayness. It's just that you're a soft man in a hard environment. Like, that's...
Yes.
If you don't stand up for yourself, or you don't have the ability to stand up for yourself, this kind of thing occurs. It's not just a prison thing. It's not just a Western thing. It's not just a masculine
thing. It's not,
thing.
But at the same
All
time...
throughout history, it's just people who have no ability to stand up for themselves, or nobody has their back when they do stand up for themselves.
Well,
this is the kind of thing that
it's
happens.
It's a closed box environment. It's really an experiment. So,
but really the point is that the guards were supposed to have his back. And that's why...
Well, he was in their care.
Yeah, he was in their care.
They had a duty of care, not a duty to make fun of.
Yeah.
I mean...
And they don't have to like him or respect them, but they do have to protect him and let him know that if anything goes wrong, they will step in. And they did not do that duty of care. That is their number one responsibility, letting inmates know that, well, I mean, the number one responsibility is probably keeping people in the prison. Number two, probably their bigger responsibility that they actually engage in their day-to-day lives a lot more is protecting inmates from other inmates. That is, like, one of their biggest responsibilities, and they neglected that by choice for one person. And that's not cool, bro.
Yeah, but I would say in this case in particular, it's because Kelly is an openly gay man. Otherwise, this would just be perceived as, you know, a normal prison situation.
Well, I mean, that's why I asked earlier, like, are we talking about the other prisoners? And then Luke was like, no, it was the guards. And that's when I was like, oh.
Well, in Canada, the guards it's not acceptable.
Yeah, no.
It's frankly, it happens.
Yeah.
We hear lots of tales about especially federal institutions. Yeah. You know, we hear of these things happening. But I think in Canada, there is a line. And for that behavior to be coming from the guards is unacceptable.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is a human rights violation. Yeah.
Also, I did look it up, and it is pronounced slavey. Slavey is an Athapascan word. It used to be pronounced, spelled with an E-Y, but they dropped the Y for reasons unknown. And now it says slave. It's weird.
Slavey. Slavey. I will make sure I get it right moving forward.
Yeah.
Thank you for looking into it.
The next time you have to talk about Great Slavey Lake or Slavey Lake City, then...
Or the Slavey Lake Correctional Facility.
Okay.
Hopefully,
so,
yeah.
We're going to move on to... There's been a lot of conversation recently in the media. For example, I think Hawaii is looking at it. Last week we mentioned Washington State. But I'm obviously talking now about conversion therapy.
Ah.
So Washington State, we said last week, it was at the governor's desk ready to sign. This week now Hawaii is introducing legislation. The UK...
I still think it's super weird that Washington State was late on this.
I know. Last week we announced that the EU said shouldn't be a thing.
Yeah.
The UK finally this week said we'll introduce some legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was made illegal in Ontario. They banned conversion therapy in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So Canada is not as ahead of the game as we would like to think. And really, there's only two provinces where it is banned, and I cannot for the life of me remember the second one, but everywhere else, it is currently allowed.
Okay.
So, there are serious issues here. It's debunked science.
Yeah.
In 1992, I was 1 year old, and the World Health Organization said, that isn't a real thing.
Yeah.
That's not an actual illness.
Yeah.
You can't actually just convert somebody out of being homo.
Yeah.
Well, it's come back in the news because of a Dr. Melvin Icecove, who is currently 72. Now, this psychiatrist based in Toronto really specialized in curing or assisting patients suffering from a sexual disorder related to homosexuality.
Got it. Mm-hmm.
So he is an old school Toronto-based doctor who's going to cure the gays.
Got it.
The reason why he's in the news is because his curing practices were a bit more practical than maybe someone ought to have been.
He was a bit more hands-on, you might say.
He was literally hands-on, and I think therein lied many of the issues. A whole lot going on that should not have been going on. So in the 90s and 2000s, these allegations that happened at that time.
Right.
His license has been immediately suspended, and there is a penalty hearing scheduled. Now, it is very likely that he will lose his license, although he is 72. I don't know if he's still practicing, but he's not now because his license is suspended. But the board described that there were no, and this is this, when I read this, it floored me, the Star reporting on this here. Neither complainant described any emotional or romantic aspects of the sexual activity with Dr. Icecove. And both said that at some point they thought that the sexual activity was part of the therapy, an attempt to cure them of homosexuality by engaging in the acts rather than fantasizing about them. That's what the five-panel disciplinary panel wrote. I mean, I have never heard of conversion therapy where you act out what you want to cure.
Well, no,
on the therapist.
There would be an avoidance therapy where, like, you play like Eminem or like Desiree's Life while getting a blowjob from a dude, and then you just associate the blowjob with like negative things. Although I will defend Desiree's Life, I think it's a great song, but. You do a negative stimulus at the same time, like you fill the room with a bad smell or loud noises or something, like some kind of an aversion thing. Basically, you traumatize somebody away from the desire, which is how gay conversion therapy is often done. You show them pornography and then you like stab them, or you give them like a mild poison or something that gives them nausea while watching.
Ipecac.
Yeah, Ipecac or something like that. And then they just, every time they see porn or they see a naked man, or naked women if you're, you know, treating women, they get nauseous because they're anticipating that, or they get some kind of like traumatic associative sort of thing. Which is why gay conversion therapy is considered torture.
Yeah, is that really a cure, or is it just...
It's just trauma.
Yeah, like, it is. It's just literally trauma. Traumatizing somebody into a... And I'm air quoting here, corrective sexuality. I mean,
strictly speaking, it works. It just doesn't work in the way that it's meant to work, and it's not cool, and it's not humane. And
but
it's not...
like getting people to write, left-handed people to write with their right hand. If you keep whipping the left hand, eventually they're going to write with their right.
It would be more like getting a left-handed person to write with their right hand by crippling their left hand, is really what it is. Exactly. Just like smashing it with a hammer a few times. Congratulations, you're right-handed now.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's a little bit more...
Well, he was accused of different types of sex acts. I won't go into the details here. This is a daytime show in some areas, so we won't. But Google it.
You have imaginations.
This is true.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, it is frankly shocking the extent to which this doctor engaged with the patients. And frankly, bizarre that they thought it was actually part of the therapy. So I'm glad that in Ontario, at least... We are seeing that therapy banned.
Yeah.
And hopefully now we can see this disturbing practice banned nationwide. Are you aware of any conversion therapy where you are? Let us know at TalkHangQueer. We'd love to find out and see if we can pick up any more stories that are maybe a little bit more current than the 90s.
Yeah.
So let us know. Reach out at TalkHangQueer.
Well, I mean, this is a current story. It's a current story about the 90s, which is...
This is true.
Yeah. Kind of, yeah.
So, Tegan and Sarah, we're going to play them in just a few moments. They've been in the news for a couple of different reasons. Right. So, they've been nominated for the Governor General Awards, which is very exciting. The Governor General's Performing Arts Award, along with Genevieve Bujold and Angela Hewitt. We're very excited.
Okay.
The Governor General Awards takes place here in Ottawa, so it kind of takes center stage here in the city. Tegan and Sarah also got in the news for tweeting a response to Ellen DeGeneres. Now, how many weeks have I said, no, we're going to talk about Bermuda, and then not actually getting around to talking about Bermuda?
Yeah.
It's been at least a fortnight of me nearly talking about Bermuda. Well,
a fortnight being 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, two shows. Well, hold on to your panties, ladies, because I'm going to talk about Bermuda right now. So Bermuda, the British Overseas Territory... had gay marriage for 6 months, and then the legislature said, well, actually, no. So then it's the only place in the world that has revoked gay marriage, because they introduced it and then unintroduced it.
Right. Okay.
So it has the the honor of being the only place in the world to have revoked gay marriage.
For context, what was the reason for them to revoke it? They must, like, if it goes through the house and everything, it must have a reason.
They were the same standard reasons, religious freedom. I think we
talked about this like a year ago. Like it was handed to them from Britain, and then they went, yeah, no, we don't always have to do what you say. And then
they overrode
it with a local law or something like that.
Well, they introduced gay marriage, and there was a major battle of rights activists in Bermuda to get gay marriage, and it succeeded. Now, the same anti-gay forces that are in Australia, that are in Canada, that are in the US, where, you know, this is redefining marriage, this is against the grace of God, this is blah, 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 blah. All of those reasons are the exact same reasons why they forced a bill through Parliament again. I think it was the Conservative Party affiliate. I forget specifically what they're called there in Bermuda. Pushed it through and it reversed the decision. Actually, speaking of that, it reminded me of another story this week from, I think it's Tennessee, where they have defeated a bill that would have outlawed marriages of children, because in Tennessee, a judge can marry anyone under 18.
Okay.
And there have been marriages of children, I think 12, 13, 14-year-olds.
Okay.
Which is child sex abuse.
To other people of the same age, I should hope.
No, and that's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, conservatives defeated the bill so that they wouldn't have to acknowledge that gay marriage is an option. They wanted to not have it so that they can fight the notion of marriage as defined by the Supreme Court.
I see.
Yeah, it was really convoluted. But effectively, they defeated a bill stopping child molestation as a middle finger to gay marriage. This kind of logical fallacies and weird thinking happens everywhere. Anyway, there was a push for the UK to stop this bill. The UK said the independent territories relatively govern themselves and we don't want to intervene now because slippery slope, where do we intervene next?
Yeah.
So they let it go. Anyway, a lot of gay cruises are based out of Bermuda, which means that all those marriages and all that booming trade would have gone, you know, it was all going there. So Ellen DeGeneres had a nice, lovely cruise scheduled for Bermuda, although now she said, no thank you, cancelling my trip, and really pushed it on her show, on her Twitter feed. Tons of celebrities are stepping up. But it isn't just Ellen DeGeneres, because she did that this week, and we've been talking about it for weeks. There was a guy.
She strikes me more as like an Alaskan cruise to go whale watching kind of a lady.
You know what? I don't know. I don't think she's like the. We saw a dreadful documentary, The Dreamboat. Oh, God, do you remember that?
I can't even. This was one of the worst documentary I have ever seen.
It's on Netflix. I thought it was. It had no purpose. I think the only thing with a sense of direction in the film was the bloody boat.
Pretty much, yes. It was. The boat knew where it was going. Those people on the boat had no idea.
I don't think that the documentary maker had a clue either. It was a
documentary
mess.
Where he didn't actually learn anything.
It's about a gay cruise boat. Okay, yeah. And it's follow like four different guys. And each of the guy are like have a different thing. One guy is like gorgeous, but he's like shy, but he can't talk to anyone. And the other guy is like more like a chubbier, otter looking Indian man.
Yeah. But there was no narration. Like we didn't know why we were watching it. I mean, we chose it because it looked like a fun documentary, but there was, like, no direction.
The entire documentary?
Just a bunch of stuff happening.
Yeah, and occasionally it'd, like, zoom in and do interviews about a sort of topic, and then it'll just, like, wander off again.
Sounds like a French film from the 80s.
I think it was a German director.
I think it's a German, and I look it up, it's like, it makes absolutely no sense.
I'm not going to lie, I zoned out for half the movie and with half the documentary, and was like Google searching cruise trips, being like, I kind of want to go to cruise now. So if anyone can hook us up with a cruise, you know, free promo from us, that's
what
I'm
saying. You can just like rent a villa in southern France and live there for like a month and a half at the cost.
For the same price of Blasted Cruise.
Yeah, no, they are expensive. Well, actually, a friend of mine went on a gay cruise recently and I asked him how he was. And he said, you'd probably not like. And I was like, why? And he's like, well, I mean, if you had infinite money, I could see you enjoying it, but I could also see you complaining that you would rather have spent a month and a half in Belgium rather than going, which is about the same cost. And he clearly knew me well, because I would rather probably spend a month and a half in Belgium.
This is true.
Specifically Liège, but anyway.
Honestly, though, I don't think cruise ships, especially gay cruise ship, not that I've been on one, is worth the money. First of all, unless you are attractive and... probably
really like parties.
Really like parties, yeah. And white, and want to get drunk 7 days a week for 7 days.
We were playing Spot the Asian.
Oh my god! For context, I am Asian. I was watching this documentary, and the whole time I spot one Asian and one black guy.
Wide angle shots of the entire boat,
mm-hmm.
like 200-300 people. And we're like, trying to find the Asian.
Well, it's kind of like a reflection of the gay community, isn't it? Like, if you have a gay cruise ship who caters to that type of demographic of gay men, you get mostly gay white men
It's the party scene is really what it is. Like, if it were, like, a gay cruise that was filled with pubs and folk music and, like, a big party on Friday night, then you get a lot more diversity. See, but these are, like, raves. Like... 20 hours a day for like a week and a half.
Yeah, but these people spend tons of money on their looks and like wherever they go with booze and everything. So, you know, that's what Bermuda is missing out of.
Thank you for bringing it back, Jake. But yes, the Bermuda tourism apparently is worth like $430 million a year and looks like they're starting to get a bit of a celebrity hit now. I hope that they will reverse this decision.
Right.
Which they haven't enacted. They passed the law banning gay marriage. But because they don't want to lose gay tourism, they're not going to enforce it until after all the gay tourists leave and they've spent all their money. Which, for me, is like the biggest middle finger of it all.
It's kind of like a half-baked...
It's really insulting.
But they're still going to miss out on next year's tourism. Like, are they going to only ban it for like 6 months of the year? Like, that's weird.
I think it's like a last-minute decision in which... they focus on the gay decision first, and then they were like, oh, we still need a backup plan for next year, so might as well, like, wait this year out.
Yeah. Oops, about all that industry that we have associated with it. We should probably do so anyway.
Well, it's an afterthought. It
was an afterthought, and hopefully... and what really gets me is that the people of Bermuda supported it, and it just got derailed. Anyway, we'll pick it up. We'll follow the story as it goes. We're going to jump now to Tegan and Sarah.
You're really enthusiastic about how much you hated that documentary.
Oh my god, it was dreadful.
It was just watching the two of you was really hilarious right now.
You know what's not dreadful? Back in Your Head by Tegan and Sarah. We'll be back just after this.
We can.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. That was Tegan and Sarah's Back in Your Head, and we are back. Now, I wanted to actually talk about the phenomena that I'm seeing. Now, this doesn't relate to a news story. We have so many news stories we maybe won't even get to today. Who knows? But I wanted Jake to jump in on this as well. I get the impression that we're starting to see a resurgence of twinks kind of owning their power.
Oh, God.
And what I mean here is, like, Adam Rippon, although he is a beautiful, sculpted athlete...
He's not a twink.
He is a sissy boy. Like, he is... You can clock him at 20 yards. Okay. That is a gay man.
He is sort of... Yeah, I can see that.
Troy Sivan, there is no mistaking that man is a homo. Mm. And also Ollie Alexander, who is in Years and Years. They all sort of look interchangeable, almost.
So are you saying all twins look the same?
No. Okay. So I know you wanted Jake to come. I'll comment and then you comment on my comment because you're probably going to... We have a tendency to half agree. I would say that they've always been there. It's just that the media has been more focused on like traditionally masculine men for a while. There's always been gay men who are like, you know what? I am gay and you can tell and I'm not going to hide it. And there it is. And there you go. But for the past, I don't know, like 10 years or so, when you, any gay media or any gay representation of gay men in like mainstream media, they tend to focus on like suburban boring guys, like sort of the Neil Patrick Harris guys. Like people like to think of him as colorful and exuberant and all that. But really, yeah. He's just a very fun suburban dad.
But almost straight passing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's been, it's just been this trend for so long that when they do depict gay men, they tend to be kind of like palatable to, you know.
See, the way I see it is.
And now it's just like, well, you know, all these like gay men who are gay acting and are okay with being gay acting gay men. Also them, by the way. Like, I think it's just like now we're just seeing depictions of them or they're being more embraced by the media. I think it might be just like a cycle that takes like every 15 years on and off or something.
Well, it's these depictions that really stood out to me. And I think a good comparison here is typically we see the sort of Armie Hammer looking gays in the world. Armie Hammer's not gay, but plays a gay character in Call Me By Your Name.
I still think that sounds like a porn name, but that is his birth name. His
actual name.
It's not a porn name.
I know. Weird, the more you know.
Ask his parents.
But we're seeing a lot more gay representation from people who look like Timothée Chalamet, who is the young twink-like character in Call Me By Your Name. It's really that sort of not built like a lumberjack, young, thin image that we're seeing represented more and kind of...
Well, about 10 years back, that was Glee. The gay characters on Glee were all like that.
I kind of disagree with that a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it has a lot of factors, and you're right, we have a tendency to half agree. Half of the things I agree with you would be, yes, the depiction, it's always been there, but if you're talking about the specific demographic Luke is talking about, like Timothy... I would say it's coming back as a resurgence because you know how the beard and the man buns go and then there's more trends
I'm
and more
so
facts.
Glad the man bun
it's,
went.
Yeah. It's sort of the same thing where mainstream society has taken in the masculine version of gay men that you see from Armie Hammer. And now the queer of the universe is expanding. So the society accepting gay men and now two... have a specific gay queer society or queer community, I guess, to pair that off, twink, it's the next thing. Because you see a lot of more feminine men and more feminine characters, gay male characters, even straight, in the recent years. Like, I'm trying to think of, what's his name from Harry Potter, the new Harry Potter.
The new Harry Potter?
No, not Harry Potter. Eddie Redmayne?
Oh, yes. Yes, Eddie Redmayne.
Redmayne? I can't.
That guy.
The guy in the new...
Professor Newt is...
Yeah.
Professor,
yeah.
Is it Newt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's gay?
No, he's not gay.
No, I'm saying
but
just...
But that... But actually...
Oh, man,
that's,
I was hoping.
I know. But there was a great piece actually talking about how Eddie Redmayne is betraying in the movies he depicts a new form of masculinity.
I would actually argue it's an old form of masculinity that we're re-embracing.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's more demure, more almost what would be typically more effeminate in terms of its approach.
Well, it's the masculinity side of that. Because I know the argument you're saying. It has more to do with competence. That he's not out to prove anything because he already knows how competent mm-hmm. he is.
But he's more caring and
secure in who he is. And yeah.
I think it's just the idea that gay men nowadays are moving on from the stereotypical and trying to find the other roles that go together with that. So Call Me By Your Name is, I guess, the step where we step into having multiple representation of gay men, both like, you know, more twinkish and some more jockey type. So, you know, it's great to see, but, you know, I don't know if I would say that twinks is taking back the power or anything.
And this is where I disagree, because I think, you know, Gus Kensworthy, for example, the U.S.
He Olympian, is not a twink.
No, he's not a twink. But typically when we look at sort of cultural leaders in our community, that is the sort of look that we're looking at. You know, almost looks like a suburban dad, kind of.
Mm.
But he's an Olympian, so obviously not quite the beer belly. But what we're seeing now is when you look at the cultural leaders that's emerging from this generation, Adam Rippon segued beautifully from professional sports to cultural icon almost overnight. He wore Morishino to the Oscars. No, Morishino, that's a cherry,
Moschino.
He wore cherries to the... No. He wore Moschino to the Oscars, and he's been on The View, and he's really out there. And we also see Ollie Alexander in the UK being a major pioneer for gay rights. And then also Troye Sivan in the States has been a big outspoken advocate. And what they're doing is they're culturally leading the queer community. Troye Sivan is... reintroducing some like Tom of Finland looks into gay culture again. And Adam Rittman is questioning and queering things as he goes, being like, you know what, I look fabulous, like whatever. And just like that no holds barred, but they're intelligent. They are forward thinking. They're not airheads, which is really the sort of reputation that twinks have. The sort of empty, idle-minded... valley girl, but in a male body sort of identity.
I mean, it's
they're really pushing this sort of new...
That's the club twink. Yeah. I think fundamentally this is related to the 40-year beard cycle. Because it is a history that has been repeated.
Oh, we're post-beard now. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so the 40-year beard cycle, there's people who've actually studied the history of men's facial hair fashion. And there is a pattern. So you've got like trimmed beard, bushy beard, like crazy beard with like braids and things woven into it. And
I think we saw glitter beard was
glitter beard, yeah.
No, yeah.
After you hit maximum beard, you start getting into eccentric facial hair, like mutton chops and bushy mustaches. After bushy mustaches comes small mustaches, and then you get a clean shaven period again. And it's a cycle that's repeated again and again. Bushy mustaches was Victorian. Edwardian was thin mustaches, then you got into clean shaven. You got bushy mustaches in the 60s. You got thin mustaches. No, bushy mustaches and sideburns in the 70s. Thin mustaches in the 80s. Now we're just repeating the exact same cycle again. It is the beard cycle, and it's basically just it's a stable cycle. The thing that came before inspires the thing that comes after. So masculinity has this cycle in the gay community because we intelligent. Sort of waify looking twinkish guys were celebrated in the 70s. I mean, you look at like David Bowie and you look at Klaus Nomi and you look at, I mean, there were for some reason my brain has just emptied. The guy who sang You Make Me Feel, can't remember, disco guy. Anyway, I think it's just part of a cycle of history that kind of repeats itself. I don't think we're looking at anything that's going to revolutionize the future of everything.
What does this mean in terms of representation? Because of course thin, tiny, twinky bodied people who are gay don't often see themselves represented, but now they're the Troye Sivans of the world.
I mean, just not in mainstream media.
This is true.
We're talking
they're
about
not true representation though.
Internet, think internet.
What impact does Timothy Chalamet have in queer culture?
Well, I mean, I kind of agree with Sebastian Point just now. It is a cycle, and at the same time, I think it's not. It's partly a cycle that's yes, more soft masculinity is coming back. But at the same time, I think it's also because our society has come to the point where we're accepting the more masculine version of gay men already, like Armie Hammer, and now which is expanding the horizon of what, or dimensions of what gay men can be. And
I wouldn't say accepting, I'd say expecting. There was an expectation that you look a certain way.
There is.
Like, if you could not grow up, there was a period about, it ended maybe 2 years ago, where you go to a bar and every gay man has a beard, even the guys with the beard clearly does not suit them.
Well, yeah, but like...
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, your beard suits you. I don't like beards, but I think Luke has a big beard. Yeah,
but like, you can change
your
beard, but if you're a twink, you can't change being a twink.
No, I know, but it was like, no.
Everybody grew at least some stubble.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it
yeah.
was. Yeah.
So
you could light a match by walking through the room. It was.
Oh, my God.
Well, what I'm saying is, yes, the depiction and like the trend of having realistic depiction of twink gay men are coming back, but the twink gay men taking back power and being more comfortable, like Adam Rippon and stuff, I would say it has more to do with, I guess, being more accepted, and the gay version is actually. Like, the gay dimension is bigger now.
Well, I'm excited. I think that we're seeing a new demographic of queer leadership, queer icons. I mean, they're all quite young. I think they're all under 30. They may even be like 25 and under, all three of them. And they're kind of really pushing the boundaries of the conversation, at least in the States. Mm. A lot of this is coming out of the US. Now, speaking of U.S. culture, and this is really where...
I think I like gay icons from Britain better, generally. They're more funny.
I would believe that.
They look like they're more fun at parties, generally.
Oh.
Yeah. You've watched a few British shows as well.
British humor and British aesthetics is different. British relies a lot on substance. And if you can't be funny, then you're not, like, enjoyable. But if... In America, North American culture is over-sexualized. Like, you see a gay person, and if they're funny, then that's good. But if they're not funny and attractive, then that might not work.
And the funny is often slapstick or yeah. physical comedy. And
the funny part is still sexualized.
Yeah. This segues beautifully into the next story in the person of Charlie Hides. Do you remember Charlie Hides?
Oh, yes. That 52-year-old drag queen.
Yeah, 52-year-old drag queen from London, now performing, I think, in Brooklyn, was on RuPaul's Drag Race. It's not related to that.
Okay.
Ended up doing a lip sync for Your Life.
Uh-huh.
Now, Charlie, you know, specialized in female impersonation, which is very typical of UK queens.
Yes.
And then for the lip sync for Your Life.
Did she actually sing? Like, was she a singer?
No, just stood there.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
because British drag queens don't lip sync. It's not a British thing to do.
Okay. They sing quite often. They actually sing.
They would sing.
Yeah.
Or they would do stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
I think we should give context first. First of all, what lip sync for Your Life is basically when the end of the episode, you have to lip sync to a certain song by a gay diva.
Yeah, it's...
Like
it's
Britney Spears or Cher.
The two losing in that round have to compete against each other.
Yeah, the two bottom contestants lip sync for whoever have to leave. But the problem in that one is, first of all, you're right. Drag queens from the UK don't lip sync. It's not in their culture. But secondly, she was also... I remember the episode because she was dressing a lot like Celine Dion, but has like 30, 40 inch heels on, like Lady Gaga size heel.
40 inch heels?
Yeah, like that.
Maybe like 14 inch. 40
yeah.
inch would be
sorry,
like...
14 inch.
40 inch would be like to your shoulder.
Okay, maybe I'm... Well, you know I like inches. But anyway... It's really hot. So like, and also it's like Britney Spears song. You're expecting a 52-year-old drag queen who specializes in impersonating Celine Dion and Cher from the UK to sing and dance to a Britney Spears song.
This has been my grudge for a long time, and is that I believe that RuPaul is
exporting.
Yeah, it is like American neocolonialism by, and there's a big word. But essentially what I'm saying here is RuPaul is exporting what the American drag is. There yeah. is a distinct history of Canadian drag. There was that...
Well, I mean, the answer to that would be, if you're not going to do American-style drag, don't go on to RuPaul's Drag
Race. Yeah, I would say the same thing.
But that's what's... I mean, it's not just that, but we are often seeing the language that's being used, the vernacular coming from there. I said spilling the tea earlier.
Yeah.
And you didn't know what that was. But I could throw a stone at a group of gay men, and chances are it'll hit somebody that knows.
I mean, back when I worked in a gay bar and I hung out with drag queens a fair deal, I mean, I didn't half the terms I hear on RuPaul, I didn't hear from them. Like, they had their own variety of language.
Well, yes. Drag queens is also a very close community. Like, they're, like, depending on where they are.
They used to be even more closed as well. It was like a sisterhood that you had to be indoctrinated.
They had to be, because that's how they
sounded culty. Oh. A non-culty version of what I just said.
But they have courts.
Yes.
Yeah, but, like, that's how they protect themselves, because that's how the drag community works. So, I mean, at the end of the day, like, the question is that wrong?
I don't think it's right or wrong. My point here is that it's being presented as the way you do drag.
Yeah.
That this is how you do drag. And I disagree fundamentally with that. And I think that disagreement is this idea of this is drag, as defined by RuPaul, is being nicked and picked at by lots of people, particularly around RuPaul's recent scandal about his the way he's described trans folks. Now, just to explain for folks here, there is a difference between someone who is trans-identified, which is where their gender identity, how they identify themselves as male or female, may differ from their gender expression or their physical sex, which may be man or woman, or presenting as manly or masculine or feminine. Now, with that being said, drag is performing a gender. It is a character for entertainment.
Yeah.
Like, that's really what it is. It's about entertaining. It's the performance. That's not somebody's life. Somebody's life is trans. It's who they go to bed as.
It's usually, I don't know, because yes, I agree. Drag is usually more exaggerated.
There is a different history though, because I mean, I didn't do drag, but I knew a lot of drag queens when I worked in the bar. But it was almost like if you were actually trans or if you were in the process of transitioning, you were considered a different kind of drag queen. Not that you weren't a drag queen, you were just in a different school of drag.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're to say, like, RuPaul wants one school of drag.
Well, that was on the critique. Show,
yeah.
That RuPaul would not have allowed trans folks on the show because they're not performing the gender.
It's a different kind of drag.
Yeah.
But it's not drag.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it's been called out as transphobic. RuPaul issued an apology saying, you know, understands the hurt that's been felt. Trans folks who had been through the contest have called Ru out on that.
Yeah.
And I think there was an editorial in The Advocate which is like, you know what RuPaul's done? RuPaul's got old. Like, and is now no longer in step with how the community sees drag. Well, for me, I think RuPaul's Drag Race is a snapshot of what the US San Francisco, New York drag scene was from 1990 to 2010. And I think it's starting to stagnate. It's not Canadian. It does not reflect the history of Canadian drag.
Or Britain or Australia.
Or anywhere else. Or Thailand. There's now a RuPaul's Thai drag race. Which is like literally airdropped in. It just boggles my mind. One of
history's most famous drag queens was the lady Dame Edna Everidge, who is Australian and would not have gotten past the first round on RuPaul's Drag Race. So,
well, I think, first of all, if you think about RuPaul's Drag Race as a drag community sort of focused core show, then yes, it would be very important. But it's in the name, it's RuPaul's Drag Race. So no matter what you say, he kind of controls the law, and it's kind of set within the American theme, the American type of drag. And I'm not saying that it's only Americans should attend, but like if you are having other international drag queen go in as well, there's different sets of talents, there's different sets of cultures, there's different sets of perspective on how to do drag. How do you quantify that and quantitate?
If they just made it super clear, even just once, like the first episode of every season, we are doing this kind of drag. then I think it would be more fair.
They often argue that anyone can bring their own style of drag, and there's different styles there. Now, we are running out of time, but I wanted to just pick on...
Because they don't really do different styles of drag.
I wanted to pick up on your point.
They do different styles within one style of drag.
We don't see a Canadian drag show or a British drag show, and the culture that we are... that we are taking, the lessons that we're learning, comes from RuPaul's Drag Race. The impact is huge. Here in Ottawa, every Thursday, there's a viewing party at the local gay pub, which also happens elsewhere in Canada. The impact of this American export is massive.
The drag that I saw 20 years ago doesn't exist anymore. 20? No, I would have been too young. So 15 years ago, I don't see
It's not surprising to see American queer culture affecting other queer culture in general, just because, you know, Americans are like the center of the universe, according to Americans.
I always thought it was Toronto. Anyway, let us know what you think.
If it's animation, it's Korea.
Is RuPaul's Drag Race dated, stuck in the past? Is it neocolonial? Or is it just something that we have to work with? And should there be a Canadian equivalent? Let us know at Talk Can Queer. Find us on Twitter and Facebook. We have run out of time. And that's all we have for now. I've been Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
I'm Sebastian too.
Thanks for listening.